Sidney Green is also checked in. Armstrong pops out. Jordan will fire the three.
Yeah, it's a three. It's a three. He's over the 50 mark.
That's right. We're over the 50 mark. This is episode 50 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's podcast, I catch up with Dave Burtenshaw from the Adelaide Crows. I talk Wi-Fi with Horizon's Mike DeGraw ahead of the SEEK Conference. And I preview the World Cup with Half on Halftime on SEN.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for the sports digital marketer. And now, here's your host, who is a handy point guard who must be defended for three-point shots, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. That's right, episode 50, 5-0. Thank you very much for everyone who has listened to even just one episode. And a big thanks to everyone who's actually appeared and been a guest on the show. Really action-packed show this week, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. Talked to Dave Burtenshaw at the Crows about the evolution of the digital team in Adelaide. We catch up with Mike DeGraw from Horizon Communications as part of our SEEK sponsor series and talk about what they're doing and ahead of SEEK in Miami. And I have a chat to Daniel Harford on Halftime. A bit of a preview looking at what Facebook and Twitter are doing in the world according to the World Cup. Don't forget, send in your campaigns. Still looking for some awesome content campaigns from sports teams to profile at SEEK. Simply send me an email. Catch you after this interview with Dave Burtenshaw.
Very happy to welcome a good friend of mine and work with him regularly at the Adelaide Crows, Dave Burtenshaw from the Adelaide Crows. Welcome to the podcast, mate.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sean. What show are we up to here? It's taken a while. Show 50 now or something?
It is. Well, good. It is show 50. I was thinking about doing a clip show, but that's sort of a bit of a cop out. It was good enough for Seinfeld and Simpsons, but no, I'm just going to keep powering through. I might do a clip show for show 100. But you know, just for the record, and it sounds a bit strange. What is your job title at the Crows?
Well, now I'm the GM of communications, but it sort of changed a bit. Recently, I've less to do with the media side now, more to do with the online direction of the club. So back into the website and our social media is probably the main two areas.
And so you sort of said it has changed, and it would have changed, you know, a lot over time. You came on board at the Crows in 2005.
Yeah, 9 years ago. So it's remarkable really how much it has changed in that time. And when I came on board, basically the job was to liaise with the media and look after that side of things. The website was something that the club had, but certainly didn't put much time into it at all. You know, really just did nothing for the website, you know, really until probably the next year when we started trying to put up some of our own content. So the website grew very quickly over those next, you know, 2 or 3 years. And then, of course, social media came in with a big bang, probably now 5 years ago that we were allowed to use Twitter and Facebook as an AFL club. So and that's just gone from what we thought was big at the time to bigger and bigger and bigger, and obviously takes up a lot more time too.
And so, yeah. So your background, sort of coming in as a comms manager at that point, and you know, media liaison, and working with the journos. Your background is a journalist.
Yeah.
Prior to the Crows.
Yep, journalist for many years, and ended up in sport at the Advertiser, and then went away to a country paper, and then came to the Crows. So yeah, I've got that. I suppose the content background, which I didn't need much in my first couple of years because, it's more to do with the media. But the content side of thing certainly now is critical for, what we're doing.
I mean, definitely, I think, from when you started, 2005 to, in the last 5 years, especially with sort of social being a really big traffic driver, more and more of the teams are now producing more of their content, breaking their own stories, being their own news resource.
Yeah.
How, I mean, it's interesting, you know, you're coming from the old school of talking to the journos and feeding them the stories and getting your, you know, getting a crow story in the back of the Adelaide Addy and things like that. How has that, you know, how has that changed coming from that world to this world? Well, now you're the news source.
Yeah, and I think it's probably going to head more and more that way. So it's a matter of if you're in the media, you know, probably trying to work with it. And from our side of things, though, you're still, the mainstream media is still really important. But I've spoken to people here about it before. When I first started, the only way we as a club could communicate to supporters was with a magazine that, you know, might come out a couple of times a year, or you know, the emails, I suppose, were being used around that time, but you didn't have a big database really, so you're only talking to a small percentage of your people. So you really relied on trying to put stuff out through the mainstream media, and of course, fans at that time, that was what they used to. But now there's so many other ways to do it that mainstream media is still important, newspapers and TV and whatever. But our fans want as much content as possible, really, about their club. So there's so many other platforms for doing that. And I suppose because we're in the club, there's things we can do that, particularly with video and access, that probably outsiders aren't going to get a chance to do. And our fans lap up that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's certainly changed, and I think it will continue to head in that way. But the reality is, if the content's not good, they're not going to look at it. So, you know, there can be criticism of stuff perhaps being, because it's in-house and it's done in a certain way. But I think, in the end, if you don't do it properly, the fans aren't going to watch it. So you've still got to try and provide the news and provide interesting angles on content you're doing.
Well, and that's the thing. And you've got a completely different agenda. And it is that point of view, that insider access. And, you know, what you would have seen and many teams are seeing is that it is a matter of the appetite for content has just grown almost exponentially over the last couple of years, especially now we've got these, you know, we're carrying around these devices that are always clamoring for information. There has been clubs that sort of go, okay, it's a sausage factory. We've got to push more content in, we'll get more numbers. Mm. But if you're just doing that and not making sure you've got that high quality of content, you're not going to get the results, because people will eventually tune that out and they'll go, I'm going to get my fix or get my content from here. So that's the balance of content versus quality. You've got to keep the quality of the content up, otherwise the fans will just tune out.
Yep, especially in our market here in South Australia. Adelaide and Port are in the paper and on TV and on radio, you know, every day. So you just got to be aware that if people are going to go to your website or you know, click on your links on social media or talk to you, they've got to have a reason to do it. And a lot of the coverage here is pretty deep and lots of it. So you got to try and do other things, and it makes it harder sometimes, because a lot of the stuff we put out there is probably available elsewhere. So you got to try and find those things that people can't see or read or maybe a different insight sometimes. And the reality is the players are often a bit more relaxed with people they know or staff they know. Sometimes we can get them to do things that they wouldn't do elsewhere.
And I guess one example of that is sort of giving that point of differentiation is this year the Crows have got their own team in the SANFL, so effectively the feeder league into the AFL and into your club. And you've been talking to you, and you've been saying that the fans have really lapped up, you know, understanding how the younger guys are going, how guys are coming back, then comeback trail, because that content's not really hitting, you know, mainstream Adelaide media.
Yeah, it's been the case even when our players were spread through the SANFL. There was always a lot of interest in what they were doing. And this year, that's certainly, you know, we see that on the website at the moment, that anything to do with the SANFL, gets a fair bit of traffic. And the reason is that you probably can't read it or find it easily somewhere else. So, that's good for us. It's another team to cover and provides a bit more work on the weekends and things like that. But, people want to know stuff and want to see stuff and hear a bit more about these players. So You know, which is good for us. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, we had a game that was for Foxtel for their reality the show they're doing where they're trying to find the recruit. Yep. And it was just a scratch match between between us and Port, mainly full of development players, and a couple of these recruits were in there. And it was amazing because it hardly got any coverage anywhere, and we were trying to downplay it in many ways. The traffic it got that week was amazing. So, yeah, that's the sort of stuff we've got to try and find, the content that, you know, perhaps we don't need to be repeating content that others have, but we've got to try and find pieces that our fans are interested in and will come and, you know, look at.
So over your time at the Crows, you would have had a few coaches at the helm at the Crows. How has it been with your current coach, Brenton Sanderson, having a bit of social media savviness to him and sort of understanding sort of how his players are using that as well? How has that sort of helped you in your role?
Well, it's always good when the coach, you know, I mean, I've had to say that Neil Craig beforehand was also really open to the social side of things and understood that, you know, that young players were coming into the club and that's how they, you know, had been using it for a couple of years. And especially now when you get kids come in that are 17, 18 and, you know, they've been around Facebook and Twitter their whole teenage lives. So they're used to it. Doesn't mean they necessarily know how to use it as a player, as a footballer, yeah. But, you know, it's part of their life. So, you know, Sando's aware of that as well. You know, we have, I think now, you know, nearly 40 of our 45 players would be on Twitter to some level. Probably only, you know, a dozen to maybe 20 use it regularly. But, I think Sando's understands the reach. He probably understands himself because he probably sees a lot of reaction to our wins and losses through his own feed. But and he's on there, and when he's used it, you know, he's not. It's hard sometimes when you have a lot of people talking to you, but he'll engage the odd person in conversation or explain something, and that's what the players can do. And as a club, I suppose we're in a position where I think the numbers we have compared to it, you know, say, you know, the bigger clubs around the world, the Arsenals and people like that, I think the AFL clubs have an advantage in that their numbers are good, but it's still not past that point where you can't talk to people. You know, our feed's still very busy, but you can still see who's talking to you and mentioning you and asking you questions and things like that. So it's a good number to be at, and Sando certainly understands what we do. Club-wise as well in that space.
I mean, and it fits for the personality that he is. I remember when he started out and we were discussing that there was a fake account out there, and this was before verification, and we pretty much said, if he, you know, Sando, if you're on and you're you and you're engaging, that fake will just go away. And, you know, I think there's a... Do you want to go through the story where he's picked up a club supporter and given him a lift to the ground?
Yeah.
And he tweeted about it? Like, you know, yeah, you want to take us through that story?
Yeah, I'm just trying to work out how far back that was now. I think it was only last year.
Yep.
We had a supporter, a 100-year-old fan who, you know, came down to the club and visited the players, and she was fantastic for, you know, 100-year-old was still going to the football. And it was only you know, a week or two later, after she'd been down the club, that Sando was driving to the game, and she used to catch the bus with a friend, and Sando drove past, and I think it might have been raining, and he thought it was her, and he did a bit of a U-ey and turned around and drove back past, and it was, and he picked her up and... yeah, took her to the game, and she actually complained because she got there a bit early than normal. The bus, you know, we've got her there at the right time, and she wasn't sure what she was going to do for the rest of the time. But and she gave Sando a bit of a spiel on what he should be doing as a coach on the way there as well. But yeah, I mean, they're the sort of stories. I mean, they're, you know, obviously for a coach, if you're on there, and you know, when a club's struggling or going through some tougher times, you know, can get hard because, you know, people will, you know, it actually does amaze me what some people will actually write to a person like a coach, and you got to deal with that. And like I said, it's at the numbers where Sando would still see a lot of that stuff, and you've got to try and push through that. And I understand that there's a lot more people out there who really do have an interest in what you say. So I think it's important at times like that that you just don't shut down completely and stop doing it because a few people are critical. I think a lot more people would still like to keep hearing from you. And that's probably the club's attitude as well. We cop it, all clubs cop it when they have a bit of a loss and there's a lot of people on there. But in the end, a lot of people like hearing from you still. So, we just try and maintain the content and the chat levels, win or lose, I suppose.
And I guess one way that you've sort of kept, I guess, that positive energy and positive action around the club is one of the ways is you do a regular Crows chat with the fans just to have a little bit of fun on Twitter. Do you want to sort of take listeners through sort of how you go about doing it, what kind of structure do you have, and sort of how the fans sort of react to it?
Yeah, Crows chat we set up at the start of last year. It's nothing new around world sport, I suppose, and different people do it at different times. But in the AFL, people have had Twitter chats and things, but probably not an out-of-hours type session like ours is. So we got the hashtag Crows Chat and built up quite a nice little community. It's not huge, but I think there are a lot of people that follow it that don't necessarily jump in until there's a prize on offer or something like that, but it trends just about every week Australia wide on a Wednesday night. Now we are Wednesday night at 7:30. It's only half an hour. Sometimes it can drag on a bit longer than that, but basically it's just our Twitter account, we try to be the way we do it, we're not too formal, I suppose. We like to use it like a fan, and we are fans, I suppose. I'm a member. I've been a member of the club right from the start, and Katrina Gill, who works with us as well, she's a big Crows fan. So we really, it's just like we're sitting around in a lounge room having a chat with all these people, and even win or lose, we got a good little crew in there. We try and ask a couple of questions and give away prizes, and the last few weeks we've been a bit lucky. Unplanned and planned. We've had a couple of players drop in. A few weeks ago, Sam Jacobs just chimed into the Crows chat and turned into the Sam Jacobs Crows chat, really, rather than yep. us. Andrew McLeod dropped in a couple of weeks ago before the Indigenous round, and that was amazing. He basically took it over, and people were asking questions and talking about the jumper he designed and things like that. So, yeah, it's a good little forum. People know they can come on, and other Crows fans are going to be around and win prizes and have a chat, talk about ins and outs and things like that. I think it's sort of helped humanise the account a little bit. Sometimes if you're just tweeting and you're sending out links and you're talking about game results and things like that, it can be a bit
bit broadcasty.
Yeah, it can be, but I think this is one way. A lot of our supporters sort of get to know us through the Crows chat a little bit. Not individually so much, but they just get to know the style we have with our Twitter account. We like to have a bit of fun with it. You can't always do that, obviously, but we try and treat it like we're fans, and we get upset and when we lose, and we enjoy winning and have favourite players and all that sort of stuff. So we try and share those sort of things. And it works pretty well. And takes up a bit of time on a night time, but we found it. It's just a good way of getting a community together, and that group, I think, understand us a bit and understand the club and what's going on, and respect it. We get the odd Port person jump in for a bit of trolling and whatever, but in general, people are pretty good, and it's a good chance to talk to people and answer questions if we can.
And it is good having that sort of set time, that sort of that tune in time that the fans know. Oh, I'm going to turn off the telly, or I'm going to pick up my phone and listen in, because they sort of know what's being listening to. But it's also good from your players' point of view if they know, oh, Crowchat, oh, my feed's going to go off. But that's also when that, you know, if it's Sam Jacobs or Andrew McLeod, it's a really safe environment for a player. And I think this is where it's a really big win for the player. You just say, look, we're going to be having Crowchat. This is what we're going to be talking about. It's a really great way for them to tick the box of I've engaged the fans this week if they jump into a really, you know, safe environment. Because you've got, one, you've got the club account there. You've got all these positive fans that will – they really just want to pat the players and that on the back. So, when we've run them, you know, with different clubs, we've found that, the players eventually just sort of tend to end up joining in every now and again. And when it's unplanned, it's far better.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fans start tweeting because they go, oh, Andrew McLeod's going to be reading these tweets. I'm jumping in. So it's really good.
Yeah, well, McLeod one just about turned into a two-hour session because he just stayed on there and was – he was favouriting tweets and, you know, replying to different things. So, I mean, that was fantastic. And that's the sort of thing that, you know, I think people appreciate on when they're on Twitter. You know, reality is probably our greatest player, and he's on there for a couple of hours talking to people and thanking them and talking about the jumper and talking about, you know, his career or whatever. It's not very often you get those opportunities. I mean, that's, you know, sort of thing just didn't happen years ago. You know, you might meet a player somewhere or, you know, talk briefly to them, but the chance for that sort of connection, it's pretty rare, and I think your fans enjoy it.
I guess another thing, aspect I wanted to talk about, and really from the positive side of social media, but from a really tragic story, there was the passing of assistant coach Dean Bailey earlier this year from cancer. Do you want to sort of take, you know, how the club sort of dealt with that internally, but also how social and all the support that came from the fans and the football community overall from Facebook posts and Twitter, and how that has sort of helped the club?
Yeah. Internally, we all knew Dean was very sick, but the end actually came quite quickly, and you can never really prepare for that sort of thing. And I think the social side of things, though, I mean, years ago, the club would have put out probably a release at some stage, and obviously the news spreads pretty quickly these days. But it was amazing how quickly through Twitter and Facebook people were able to talk about a person like Dean and what he meant to them, or what they thought of him, or just pay their respects. And, you know, within minutes of us putting up any content or, you know, information about Dean, the reaction was incredible. And it's just, the circumstances are terrible, obviously, but, you know, it does, you know, social does provide another means for people to show how they feel about someone, or show how they feel about the club. And for us as well, you know, just to see that the level, I mean, I think the family in particular were amazed at the support they got from the fans, through a lot of the social media, which of course it gets picked up as well by the mainstream media, who talk about, you know, who's tweeting this and who's tweeting that and how many people are talking about it. So not that there's too many positives out of something like that, but social certainly provides, you know, opportunities for supporters, and not just our supporters. We had, you know, something like that gets shared a lot on Facebook. You know, it goes out to a lot of people who, you know, it really crosses club boundaries. And you know, we had, you know, just on Twitter, you know, a lot of, you know, most clubs tweeted something, and supporters jumped on board with that sort of thing as well. So, it was a tough period for the club, but, you know, sometimes being able to read a lot of the good things that were written about Dean at the time, sort of helps a bit.
I've seen that with a couple of clubs sort of going through similar tragedies. Just, I guess it just gives real, you know, that grieving in real time to a certain degree, but allows the club and the fans to sort of rally around it. You know, very sad to see Dean go. One thing I did want to touch on before we finished up was the Crows have moved home base into the newly refurbished Adelaide Oval. Do you want to give a little bit of, bit of feedback on how that move has gone and how that potentially has, changed how the fans interact, game day and what they're doing game day? Has anything changed differently from in the move to Adelaide Oval?
Yeah, on game day, I suppose we've always had issues with connection and no Wi-Fi or lack of Wi-Fi at Amy Stadium as well. So during a game, it can be it's still at Adelaide Oval. It's very inconsistent whether people can have access. But I suppose the difference with Adelaide Oval is we're just getting so many more photos. You see so much more photos through Instagram in particular or Twitter, of people and their experience on the day of going to the ground, seeing it for the first time or being there at night or, just enjoying it. Well, at Amy Stadium, we hardly ever had people posting photos, unless it was a fantastic sunset or something like that. Now at Adelaide Oval, if we go through our Instagram or you search through Twitter afterwards, after a game, some really, really good photos, of the stands or just the views and people enjoying themselves there. So that's probably the biggest change as far as the supporter goes, some really good content coming out of it. Twitter-wise, I think in the ground at the moment, quite a few people still struggle to get on their phones and get involved. And I know even we work up in the media box with a lot of the stuff we do, through the social channels, and sometimes we get locked out as well of with no Wi-Fi. So we've got to deal with that as well. And hopefully down the track that improves. But I think in general supporters have loved Adelaide Oval. Obviously our fans would have liked to have seen us play a bit better there. I think, we've had a couple of good wins, but we've had a couple of losses as well, including the one to Port early in the year in our first home game against Sydney where we didn't play that well. So, those sort of things obviously affect the fans' experience. But, social-wise, still very active. But like I said, some of the photos have been fantastic that we've seen.
Well, I did hear from a couple of my mates who went over to watch the Crows game when you defeated my team,
Collingwood.
Collingwood. Yes, you can mention that and rub that in if you want. But they did say it's the loudest venue they've ever been at.
Yeah.
It is just a matter of time where that will be very much a fortress for both the Adelaide teams if you get that. Just ferocity of fans and that noise for the people listening, and I don't know if you've got any sounds of the game, I'll include it for the sounds of the game. But at the end of the third quarter, Josh Jenkins kicked a goal because the umpires did not hear the siren. It was that loud, so they've had to effectively have they boosted the
yeah
sirens
apparently
now?
They pumped it up, but
that's always good. And I think we did both sort of forecast a lot more photos coming through because the stadium looks terrific, and it's being closer to the city, and everyone wants to brag where they are, they're at what the ground looks like, that kind of thing. I think that's only going to keep continuing, and then hopefully some people at the SEA conference can come up with a solution that they can pitch back to the Adelaide Oval and we can fix that Wi-Fi problem, hopefully.
Yeah, it'd be good. We'd like to do a lot more at the venue, but that does restrict it in some ways. But, like I said, there's still plenty going on game day. People still want to, take photos of themselves and take photos of the players and all that. And like we've spoken about sometimes, when you work at a club, you can take some of that stuff for granted because you're in the building and you see the players regularly and sometimes you just got to remember that for many of the fans, you know, they don't get to see these players up close very often. And they want to talk about it and share about it, share it, and hopefully we can sort of continue to try and amplify some of that. And you know, we try and do, you know, Storify wraps and things like that where we pull together some of that content. But I'm sure there's lots more we could do to show off what the fans are doing.
One last question, because a lot of us who do work in sport are sports fans and sports fans at heart ourselves. Can you tell us a little bit about your recent sojourn to the FA Cup?
Yes, a great birthday trip. It nearly turned into a disaster because I had a bit of plane trouble on the way over and missed a connection and got to Heathrow and the game was just about to start. But
we're going to put it up front. You're an Arsenal fan. Yeah, and have been a lifelong.
I played cricket in England in my early 20s and I lived in North London and basically the choice was Arsenal or Tottenham. And I took the Arsenal side then and it's probably grown over the years. My younger son got into Arsenal as well. And so it's not definitely not lifelong. I used to watch English soccer when I was a kid, but I never really had a firm team at that stage. But yeah, so from my early 20s, Arsenal. But
you've had a delay. You're flying in for the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
You've arrived at the airport after the delay. When did you get to the game?
Probably took my seat about 30 minutes in the first half. So unknown to me, as I was walking towards Wembley, the Hull was 2-0 up. If I'd known that, I might have turned around, I think, or after a 35-hour trip or whatever it was. But then just before I got into the stadium, someone obviously scored, and from what I could hear, it sounded more like the Arsenal, you know, chanting. Then I finally got into the media area where I was lucky enough to have a seat, and it was 2-1, and not looking good at that stage, but fortunately, Arsenal... They started to get on top and it always looked like they were going to score and they pushed it into extra time and I got to see a win. So in the end, I was a bit happier at that stage than I was,
45 minutes earlier,
yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. You can follow Dave on Twitter. DB Crows is your Twitter handle. Yeah. And I'll put a few links to everything that the Crows do in the show notes. Thanks for coming on the podcast, and I'll see you next time I'm in Adelaide.
All right. Cheers, Sean. Thank you, mate.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Dave Burtonshaw. And Crow's Chat is exactly an example of a campaign or a piece of content that I'm looking for to include in my presentation at SEAT, profiling digital campaigns and content around the world. So if you're doing something specific with your team or a team that you love and you love seeing what they're doing, whether it be on social media or on digital, whether it be from an article or video or infographics or something like, send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. Now it's time to profile Horizon Communications. See them at SEAT.
SEAT 2014 Sponsor Series. See you in Miami in July.
To welcome Mike DeGraw, President CEO of Horizon Communications, who's going to be a sponsor at SEAT. Looking forward to catching up with him in Miami. Welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thanks very much, Sean. Happy to be here.
So one of the things I wanted to discuss with you is sort of being in the space of Wi-Fi and getting the fans connected in stadiums. I've only seen, the Wi-Fi situation, the industry as far as servicing the stadium market grow over the last couple of years through my involvement with SEAT. Do you want to give us a little bit of background from your experience with Horizon in seeing stadiums and teams sort of struggle with the rising use of smartphones and the growing need for Wi-Fi, how that's changed over the last 3 to 4 to 5 years?
This experience over, say, the last 4 years,
yep.
has grown in this space, largely growing with U.S. mobile carriers, and AT&T in particular, as they employed the use of 3G offload technology for their cellular networks, and putting in very large scale and what you would now deem high density Wi-Fi in sports stadiums to accommodate their customers. And as that has grown, you know, stadiums and fans have started demanding basically that stadiums have, you know, Wi-Fi and that their phones, their mobile phones, work when they go to a sporting event. You know, largely because especially the younger generation are so active on social media that people want to say, I'm here, right? And, you know, I believe that there was a statistic that there were more up.
Hang on, we've, for all the technology in the world, it looks like we've lost you there for a second.
Oh, really?
Yeah, go. No, that's it. You're back. You're back now. You're up to the stats about the uploads.
I'm on a landline.
I know. It's quite ironic, but I am, you know, I'm calling all the way from Australia, and here we are talking about technology and everything, and we can't even get a good line to record the podcast. But continue. You were talking about the uploads in a stadium.
Yeah, that uploads are so the typical dynamics that go on in stadiums these days are not like the typical internet usage at your home, where you might have, you know, 8 megabit down and 2 megabit up. What's happening in the stadiums is that there's more up or equal up to down, because people are pushing content up to social media sites and big content, whether it's photos or videos or what have you. And the other thing is that they want it to be done at that moment, not when they leave the stadium, right? They want it to be involved in their social media world, and so there's been a pressure on a lot of teams and venues to be able to accommodate that, and so there's a lot of dynamics that are going on, because you incorporate the Wi-Fi side of that with distributed antenna systems, DAS, for cellular traffic. And the clubs are kind of left with like big decisions to make, and it's not inexpensive to put in a proper Wi-Fi network in a you know venue that houses you know tens of thousands of people, and so you know that's kind of where the industry is today. I mean, there's still, you know, I don't know the exact statistic, but I'd say more clubs don't have proper Wi-Fi than do have proper Wi-Fi.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that is still the case. I think everyone's trying to reach there. Like what you were talking about earlier about the fans wanting to, you know, to post. And I think the growth of social media platforms that require more data, like Instagram, and the fact that, you know, things like Vine and Instagram are offering video, it obviously becomes a bigger weight on the network. But there's a reason that stadiums like the Giants AT&T Park is one of the most Instagram parks in the world. I mean, yes, it's got Cubby Cove and the sunset looks great over the bay and all those kind of things, but one of the main reasons it's the most Instagram is the fact that you can get on the on their Wi-Fi and push out that content. And so you see so many teams that are following the leads of guys like the Giants and AT&T Park and saying, we want that for our fans because it's such a great advertisement for people who aren't at the game to get them to the game.
Correct. And I mean, AT&T Park is a great example, and it is, in my opinion, I'm a bit biased because we did all the installation of the Wi-Fi there, but on behalf of AT&T, but it's the most connected stadium in the world, and whether it is the distributed antenna system or the Wi-Fi, I think from a ratio of access points to fans, it's by far the best and the fastest and best managed. And the team at the Giants, as well as the team at AT&T that supports it, of course, their name is on the park. It's important, but it is bar none the experience that you can have
I think one of the things that's, you know, I joke about AT&T Park that it has better Wi-Fi and connectivity than my house. But one of the things I think, and they've been doing it for a long time, one of the things I think people have struggled with, or teams and venues to a certain degree, is you did say it's not inexpensive to justify that cost. So, you know, things like ROI come up, and how do we pay for it? How do we monetize these kind of things? Is that something that you guys at Horizon sort of help the team and the venue sort of step through that scenario and bring partners on board to help solve that problem?
So, I mean, it's very topical. Everyone's looking for the magic thing to help with ROI because it is so expensive. I mean, you look and you're talking in the millions of dollars or millions of pounds to do a proper Wi-Fi network in the US, UK, or Australia, wherever. And you know, at the end of the day, the real ROI is you know, getting people to buy tickets to go to the match instead of sitting, you know, on their sofa and watching it on TV. At the end of the day, that's what it really is about. But the fan engagement and the fan experience and trying to get you know, more, you know, fan dollars at the venue is a real thing. And so we work with a lot of different companies, and the obvious industry to help, not necessarily pay for all of it, but at least subsidize a Wi-Fi network in a sport venue, is advertising. And you know, if you go onto YouTube and you look at a video, you have to look at a 15-second ad. And so it's only natural at a sporting venue that you authenticate onto a Wi-Fi network, and you get a 15-second ad, which then the sponsors like because they're getting one-to-one advertising. And so that's one area where there is a lot of interest in helping to offset the cost of the Wi-Fi network. But, you know, again, at the end of the day, it's a combination of that and, you know, all the social media applications that now exist within the stadium environment. But then at the end of the day, it's really the stadium being able to sell out and you know, getting the tickets for the seats, but also the concession money, the merchandise, you know, money and so forth. I mean, that really at the end of the day has to be the driver. And you know, if you're not selling out, if people, especially younger people, who expect Wi-Fi everywhere they go, and say I'm going to sit home and watch this on my TV, so most here in the U.S. the leagues get it: NFL, Major League Baseball, NHL, MLS, NBA. They all understand that, and they have pretty advanced policies as far as making sure that venues have, you know, appropriate wireless connectivity.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the best quotes, and it sort of shows the maturity of the market, you know, at SEAT 2011, people were talking about how do we get it, whereas at last year in Kansas City, I think the quote was, Wi-Fi is necessary for stadiums as much as, you know, bathrooms and just standard amenities. If you were to design a stadium now, you wouldn't design a stadium without bathrooms, and the same, you wouldn't design a stadium without Wi-Fi connectivity, because people are almost seeing them as, you know, as something that they need just as much as one as the other. So, you know, if you're looking at the cost of the plumbing of a stadium, you've got to look at the Wi-Fi and the infrastructure that you need to put in place in that same manner.
Absolutely, and I, you know, Christine that from Seat has been a huge driver in this, and in that she has brought it to the, you know, with the architects, and I think we were sitting on the panel where that was actually brought up. But that at what stage does the architect engage with the IT department of the venue, and it's not as early as it should be, and if you look. You know, there's some great examples of recent builds, you know, including Barclays and Sporting KC, you know, other brand new venues in the U.S. that did, you know, take into account technology. But this has been such a recent surge that even if you go back 5 years, there's a lot of things that weren't taken into account, including, you know, real estate, because you need real estate amongst the, you know, throughout the stadium just to put your telecom equipment, cable pathways, etc. So it is a relatively very new thing, and you know, one of the things Horizon has made ourselves expert at is retrofitting older stadiums, and that's where, you know, if you look at Dodger Stadium, it's the third oldest functioning Major League Baseball stadium in the United States, and was built in the 50s. And, you know, we just finished an enormous project there. And so, you know, retrofitting is definitely possible, but if the architects, you know, can take into account the technology aspect of, you know, designing new venues, it certainly reduces the costs significantly. And just makes it much more easy to get that done. I think they've done that up at Levi Stadium in Santa Clara.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely on the radar now of architects. I mean, I think we'll give the designers of Dodger Stadium a pass. As you said, it was built way back when. I don't know if you know, it was actually designed by they went to the people at Disneyland that designed Tomorrowland, because they want a futuristic feel for the stadium. So the same designers that did Tomorrowland at Disneyland did Dodger Stadium, but they obviously did not foresee the Wi-Fi evolution that was going to happen 40 years later. But we'll cut them a little bit of slack.
Kudos to them, because it's still a magnificent stadium, you know, 50, 60 years later. So, you know, they did a good job on the longevity of it. But yeah, like you said, they didn't foresee needing to pull 24-strand single-mode fiber optic cables through it.
Yeah, exactly. One other thing, we've been sort of focused on, I guess, the stadium side of things and providing for those fans, but another big issue around big events, especially sort of pop-up events and one-off events, is this need for a temporary solution. So whether it be at at golf courses or big major events that sort of just pop up, they don't have an ongoing 82-game season or those kind of things like in baseball or basketball. Do you want to talk about some of the temporary stuff that you guys have been doing and what you're planning to do with a couple of clients coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. So Horizon has done many temporary events, in particular in the Western United States over the last several years. We generally do the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am at Pebble Beach Golf Course, where we have Wi-Fi throughout the golf course that is not to be seen because it's such a pristine viewing experience. So we're very good at the aesthetics as well, but putting in a very large scale Wi-Fi network over 18 holes for a period of a week and then taking it down. We've done the Coachella Music Festival, which in Southern California is a very, very big music festival and which has zero wireless connectivity 360 days of the year, or approximately that, and then they host the music festival, and it gets all wired up. And then we're certainly haven't signed anything, but we're in discussions with Rugby World Cup England, with Cricket World Cup that's going to be in Australia, New Zealand. We actually are part of San Diego's bid package for the America's Cup 2017, to put Wi-Fi in throughout those, you know, the various venues. And if you look at both Cricket World Cup, Rugby World Cup, they're having, it's not actually the venues that we're looking at, it's the fan zones.
Yep.
And the fan zones have become a really popular thing to really bring in people. And a good example of this is in the UK at Gloucester. So King's Home Stadium has, I think, they're hosting four World Cup matches, but they're putting in two very large fan zones, and they're going to be with screens, and they're going to keep them open for the duration of Rugby World Cup, because it's such a wonderful rugby city. and they want Wi-Fi coverage for all the fans, you know, during any time that they come for the 7-week duration. So I think, you know, we're Formula One in Europe and in other events like this, people want Wi-Fi, and you know, whether it's permanently installed or temporarily installed, I mean, that's what Horizon does.
Well, thank you very much, Mike, for coming on the podcast. I'm looking forward to catching up down in Miami. Don't forget, if you are coming along, don't forget to stop by the booth, say hello to BJ, and get the golf shirt that you guys will be handing out at the Horizon booth. Look forward to catching up in Miami.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Sean, and we'll definitely catch up in Miami. And as you just alluded to, Horizon is the jersey sponsor this year, and so Christine has been kind enough to produce a very nice Nike Dry Fit golf shirt for all the delegates attending, and that we will be having those at our booth at SEAT, and people can come by, and whether it's BJ or one of the other members of the Horizon team that is going to be handing them out, we look forward to seeing everyone there.
Not a problem. We'll see you in Miami.
Find all Sports Geek podcasts at sportsgeekhq.com/SGP.
50 episodes, all available at the Sports Geek podcast archive. With a new podcast player, you can play every single episode directly from the page. World Cup is upon us, and I had a chat with Half on Halftime on my regular spot on SEN.
Sean Carolan, our sports digital media guru for SportsGeekHQ.com.
Oh, he'd be licking his lips this time of the year, sporting year, because the World Cup's around the corner. Sean, g'day.
G'day, Half. Yes, it is around the corner. And, not only a few more sleeps, and it is upon us. Are you ready?
I'm ready, but I need you to inform me how I can be even more ready, more interactive. What's going on social media-wise?
Well, this morning, Facebook have launched what they're calling Trending World Cup. And so if you go to facebook.com/World Cup, it will just bring in all the content of all the teams, players, and your mates talking about the World Cup. So you can use the hashtag World Cup, but they'll sort of aggregate it in there. So if you want to get the latest updates, you can go there. And they've also provided this interactive map just to show the breadth and how far football fans there are now. We've got Ronaldo at the top of the tree with over 84 million Facebook fans, mind you. And what you can do in this interactive map is see where he ranks in Australia and where he ranks in the US and those kind of things. So compare him against. Have a bit of fun and see where they're located. And then Twitter is also got involved. You know, we've already talked before how it's great from a live platform point of view.
Yeah, it's the best.
And so they've launched hash flags.
What's a hash flag?
Well, we know what a hashtag is, where, you know, you put the hash and you cheer for your team. So for the Socceroos, it'll be Go Socceroos, and that'll be trending, I guess, for the next week or so while they're doing their first couple of games. But hash flags is where you can put AUS, so you can use a 3-letter code for the country. And Twitter will just pop on the little flag of Australia at the end of it. So you get a little bit of a visual, like little Australian flags throughout your feed.
Nice.
A little bit of value add. And so, you know, if it's Chile, as it's meant to be pronounced, I think, as I heard KB saying.
Chile
and Australia, you can use CHI, I think it'll be Chile, and AUS. And you get the little flags in your feed. So a little minor thing, but they're also going to have in the app itself, the Twitter app, where you can go to World Cup and just get that feed. So similar, same thing. So if you just want to tune into the World Cup and get all the latest and, you know, find more players to follow and follow the other federations and the partners and stuff and what they're doing, you'll be able to do that by, you know, following World Cup or mentioning World Cup. But they'll all be sort of aggregated there for you. So it'll just make for a bit of a, you know, that second screen experience, either you've got the iPad out or the phone, and you can just sort of flick along and see what other people are saying around the world, you know, because Socceroos will be up early. Everyone will be up early Saturday morning to watch them. So, you know, while you've got your cornflakes and your beer and your phone cheering the Socceroos on, you'll be able to do that. I'd like to see Twitter like extend that to put the little Australian flag on Go Socceroos. Like, let's take a little bit further. So
Yeah, there's some of the things that are happening, and all the big players from a marketing point of view and the brands are now coming in with their absolute best stuff. It's like top shelf stuff so far. And I don't know if you've seen it, and I know Kerry posted it on the halftime
Facebook page.
Go to Facebook.com halftime. Check out the Nike football, the last game video. It's a cartoon featuring Ronaldo, Wayne Rooney, Neymar. They're all in cartoon
Zlatan
form.
Popovich.
Exactly. It is an absolute cracker, and it definitely sticks the needle into Rooney because he does look like Shrek in this. So
it is a great one. You can check it out on the Halftime Facebook page. And for all the latest in the World Cup and how to utilise it, how to get all the information you want, sportsgeekhq.com is the place to go. Thank you, Sean.
Cheers, Harp.
See you next week.
Need help with your content? Book in for a content brainstorming session with Sports Geek now. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/work.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Sports Geek Podcast, episode 50. Thank you very much. That clock tells me to wrap up this episode and get out. I'm going to dedicate this episode to all of my guests that have been on the show. 50 episode, had over 50 guests from around the world, the US, Australia, New Zealand, the UK. Thank you to everybody who has been on the show. Please connect with them, follow them on Twitter, connect with them on LinkedIn. They're all very smart people, and I'm looking forward to catching up with a fair chunk of them at SEEK Conference in Miami. I hope to see you there too. Please send in those nominations for content for me to include in my presentation. This week's Sound of the Game comes from the World Cup, comes from the very first game, and comes from Kaká. That was some video from Kaká, famous Brazilian footballer. He took that and put it up on his Facebook page when Neymar kicked the second goal from a penalty to give them a win in the opening match of the World Cup. I'm going to have plenty of coverage for the World Cup over the coming weeks. Obviously, working with the Socceroos, they're doing some tremendous stuff, and the whole country is getting behind the Socceroos, which I'm sure is the case around the world. I'm doing regular daily spots on Grandstand and SCN, covering the weird, wonderful links and some of the stats out of the World Cup. So I'll be bringing you that on the podcast. That's it. Thank you very much again. My closing 2 cents, watch the world's marketers at the World Cup, because imitation is a lot easier than innovation.
Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Find all Sports Geek podcasts at sportsgeekhq.com/SGP. Want to maximize returns from your digital team? Contact Sports Geek about content and commercialization workshop. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
17 of 18. Look at this. First two games against the Hornets, 47 points combined. Tonight, 47 points so far. With one more free throw, he has exceeded his previous output this season against the Bees. Hornets within 6. Kobe has 48. Kobe has 50. He's done it. 4 straight games, 50 or more points. Only the second player in NBA history to ever accomplish that.